two or three. Maybe four or five, counting the troopers I knew. You probably didn't. Most Special Forces careers never happened. It's like people who claimed to have been at Woodstock. Believe them all, the crowd must have been 10 million strong. Or like New Yorkers who saw the planes hit the towers. They all did, to listen to them. No one was looking the wrong way at the time. People who say they were Special Forces are usually bullshitting. Most of them never made it out of the infantry. Some of them were never in the army at all. People dress things up. Like my sister. It's human nature. What's your point? I'm working with what we've got. We've got two random names, an election season starting up, and your sister in HRC. You think John Sansom is lying about his past? Probably not. But it's a common area of exaggeration. And politics is a dirty business. You can bet that right now someone is checking on the guy who did Sansom's dry cleaning 20 years ago, wanting to know if he had a green card. So it's a no-brainer to assume that people are fact-checking his actual biography. It's a national sport. So, maybe Lila Hoth is a journalist, or a researcher, cable news or something, or talk radio. Maybe she's Sansom's opponent. Not with a name like that. Not in North Carolina. Okay, let's say she's a journalist, or a researcher. Maybe she put the squeeze on an HRC clerk for Sansom's service record. Maybe she picked your sister. Where was her leverage? That's the first big hole in the story. Which it was. Susan Mark had been desperate and terrified. It was hard to imagine a journalist finding that kind of leverage. Journalists can be manipulative and persuasive, but no one is particularly afraid of them. Was Susan political? I asked. Why? Maybe she didn't like Sansom. Didn't like what he stood for. Maybe she was cooperating or volunteering. Then why would she be so scared? Because she was breaking the law. Her heart would have been in her mouth. And why was she carrying the gun? Didn't she normally carry it? Never. It was an heirloom. She kept it in her sock drawer, like people do. I shrugged. The gun was the second big hole in the story. People take their guns out of their sock drawers for a variety of reasons. Protection, aggression, but never just in case they feel a spur-of-the-moment impulse to off themselves far from home. Jake said, Susan wasn't very political. Okay. Therefore, there can't be a connection with Sansom. Then why did his name come up? I don't know. Susan must have driven up. Can't take a gun on a plane. Her car is probably getting towed right now. She must have come through the Holland Tunnel and parked way downtown. Jake didn't reply. My coffee was cold. The waitress had given up on refills. We were an unprofitable table. The rest of the clientele had changed twice over. Working people, moving fast, fueling up, getting ready for a busy day. I pictured Susan Mark 12 hours earlier, getting ready for a busy night. Dressing, finding her father's gun, loading it, packing it into the black bag, climbing into her car, taking 236 to the beltway, going clockwise, maybe getting gas, hitting 95 heading north, eyes wide and desperate, drilling the darkness ahead. Speculate, Jake had said. But suddenly I didn't want to, because I could hear Farisa Lee in my head, the detective. You tipped her over the edge. Jake saw me thinking and asked, What? Let's assume the leverage, I said. Let's assume it was totally compelling. So let's assume Susan was on her way to deliver whatever information she was told to get. And let's assume these were bad people. She didn't trust them to release whatever hold they had over her. Probably she thought they were going to up the stakes and ask for more. She was in, and she didn't see a way of getting out. And above all, she was very afraid of them. So she was desperate. So she took the gun. Possibly she thought she could fight her way out. But she wasn't optimistic about her chances. All in all, she didn't think things were going to end well. So? She had business to attend to. She was almost there. She never intended to shoot herself. But what about the list? The behaviors? Same difference. She was on the way to where she expected someone else to end her life. Maybe some other way. Either literally or figuratively. Chapter 14. Jacob Marks said, "It doesn't explain the coat." But I thought he was wrong. I thought it explained the coat pretty well. And it explained the fact that she parked downtown and rode up on the subway. I figured she was looking to come upon whoever she was meeting from an unexpected angle, out of a hole in the ground, armed, dressed all in black, ready for some conflict in the dark. Maybe the winter parka was the only black coat she owned. And it explained everything else, too. The dread, the sense of doom. Maybe the mumbling had been her way of rehearsing pleas or exculpations or arguments, or maybe even threats. Maybe repeating them over and over again had made them more convincing to her, more plausible, more reassuring. Jake said, "She can't have been on her way to deliver something because she didn't have anything with her." "She might have had something in her head. You told me she had a great memory. Units, dates, timelines, whatever they needed." He paused and tried to find a reason to disagree. He failed. "Classified information. Army secrets. Jesus. I can't believe it." "She was under pressure, Jake." "What kind of secrets does a personnel department have, anyway, that are worth getting killed for?" I didn't answer, because I had no idea. In my day, HRC had been called PERSCOM, Personnel Command, not Human Resources Command.